This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing. This is J. Douglas Barker. This book is a Trafford publication titled Meanderings, Poetry and Short Fiction, and the writer is W.A. Salmon. Welcome, Bill, to the program, all the way from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Thank you.
Tell me about this book. You wrote your poetry and short stories over a number of years, I believe, and then decided to put it into a book. What motivated you to do so?
Well, I suppose it was all these poems and pages of stories cluttering my place, and I figured I better get all this pile of paper gathered into one single entity. And I always dreamed of having it within a single jacket altogether. And I finally made the move, and I contacted Trafford Publishing for that.
Bill, explain to us the style of the book. What is the content?
So it starts with many poems. I think I have about 62 poems. And then I finish with short fiction, short stories. It's basically meant to be kind of like just a quick read. You can pick it up and maybe invest 5 minutes as you're on the go. You may be commuting on a train or something and get a little hit of fiction. Or you can bump off a short story or a poem quite quickly.
And have you always been a writer?
No, actually I haven't. I had no confidence to be a writer. That all started through acting. I was in a small group, and we all became quite tired of the usual monologues we'd sign out of the library. It was all the Dustin Hoffmans and everything else, and everybody was saying, God, we've got to get something different. We've got to get something new. I'm tired of the same old thing. And then all eyes kind of turned to me, and I said, no, you know what? Don't even look at me. I can't do that. Anyway, but they just kept staring, no mercy. And sooner or later, I went, okay, and I produced a few scenes, because I thought I can't paint pictures with words. But eventually, I started to pick it up and get better at it. And I found I enjoyed writing so much that it kind of took over for the acting bug.
You have several poems in your publication. Would you like to share one of them today?
Oh, sure. We can lead off. I think the first one in the book I'll try. It's called Glastonbury Tor. Tor some kind of ancient man's tear. Where do I go now that my soul was born somewhere back there? Now there's a haze in your kindled slits, and your stones are fused by dimming light. Sit back and watch the sea appear, while sheep call out to coming night. Oh yes, way back when I was young, before the blind cold light, to waking stars that simply whisper, time to sing in flight.
Excellent. And a lot of your poetry is easy to read, short, to the point. Was that your purpose? How did you put this together? Who's your target audience? Who do you think this will appeal to?
It's a good question. I believe the romantic in everyone is one aspect, and I made an effort of studying classical literature in college to try to get a handle on what they did, what the greats did, really, and see what the backbone of literature was all about, what made it last. So I believe I can probably key in with that kind of audience as well, people that are familiar with those things.
And describe the process of writing your book to come up with these themes, these ideas, these concepts. How does that come about?
It was mostly a matter of reacting to things that really bothered me or things that inspired me in some way. It was kind of a percolation process of a couple of weeks, and all of a sudden this poem kind of came leaping out of my mind, and it was a little bit like hunting in a way, but you're trying to capture the animal that comes leaping at you out of the bush. And if you're quick enough with a pen, you can get it down. You can capture it. But some things took quite an effort as well, because I have another one, quite a long poem that took me almost 10 months, mostly written on coffee breaks at work.
Wow.
Yeah. It's called Soft Goes the Drummond. It's more of an epic poem. That one, I never try to force poems. I let them just come at me as they will, because if you try forcing them, I think it weakens them. So the best thing is, that's why Soft Goes the Drummond took so long.
10 months is a long time. Yeah, it's a long investment in your literature.
Well, it was, yeah. I don't plan on ever taking that long on another poem again in my life. But it's funny how sometimes you get nothing, and then all of a sudden. An entire stanza will suddenly hit you quickly, you know, very fast succession, where you're like, oh yeah, give me a minute, just a sec, I got to get that. And the thing I hate is where you try to you try to capture something, and then that fades, and you never really get it back. That's the worst, probably the worst nightmare for any writer, I think, would be that.
Well, many of my writers will do what's called journaling, and on a daily basis might put an entry into their journal. Is that something you do, or do you work simply from an inspirational standpoint?
It's inspirational. Like, I'll be just happening to glance at, in some direction at something. Like, I was on a job one time where I was on a little wharf running some stuff out to a yacht. And I looked down beside me, I realized that I saw below me there were starfish kind of grazing on these big boulders about 3 feet under the water, and that birthed the poem, What the Ocean Brings, or I think was the poem. And that was the thing. Just that one sight kicked the whole thing off.
I noticed some of your poems have to do with Scotland. Is there a connection there? Have you traveled to Scotland, or is this part of your history, your personal family history?
Yeah, I did. I've got Celtic blood as well, but I did travel to Scotland in 1990, and it was just an amazing time and an amazing place, and I just had to record not the experiences, but just how the place hit me. You know, I could like look at the misty Highland hills and everything, and just say, "Oh man, this is so wonderful." And it just kind of spurred and birthed a number of poems.
One of those poems that I see, which has nothing to do with Celtic roots necessarily, but has a title that I can relate to, titled "Wings of Faith." Take the flight of the eagle. Defeat those bruised and covetous clouds. Stand on both sides of a razor. Bear your spirit to the blade. Let it pass through. You'll not be cut. No sting, but a twining through faith. Let diamond feathers strive to slice you. Let those winds shriek as you plummet. Know your wings will bear you, though they feel broken, shattered. The skies will speak and bring you forth upon your wings of faith. My dad was a minister, and one of the churches that he founded had that in its title, so that caught my attention. Tell me, how long did it take you to put this together?
The entire book?
Yes.
Oh, I think I started it. It was kind of my entire writing life. It was in my early 20s. This published in 2003. So it was a good solid decade of writing. Well, as things inspired me, anyway. Very, very nice job on reading my Wings of Faith poem, by the way.
Well, I flubbed a couple of lines, but I'm going to fix those so that it comes out a little bit better. Tell me more about the book. How would you introduce this to someone?
I referred to it before as just a coffee table book, really. Where you say, oh, what's this? And you start to get into it, and then you just keep going. But I make it so that I can let people off the hook, and they can just say, okay, well, I'll finish this poem. I like to think it gives you pleasure. I think you can be satisfied with one experience and then come back to it later. It's kind of like a little favorite little place in the woods or something you can visit. Compilation of poetry and short fiction.
Tell me, how is this book different from others in the marketplace?
I can't really think of anything that's exactly like it. There are anthologies, but I don't remember anybody ever mixing poetry and short fiction, short stories together.
Any of the short stories that you've written, do you think they are the seeds that might develop into a movie project?
I've heard of great things coming from very small samplings, very small stories, like The Old Man and the Sea. But that's a classic, wonderful tale. You never know. I mean, something could strike someone in a certain way, and they could say, you know what, I can do something with this. Well, most of the short fiction, I think it can be adapted to TV.
Is there anything, any of those short stories that stand out in your mind as the ones that are your favorite?
I think Dig is an interesting one. It kind of deals with haunting, and also in a way it kind of deals with time travel. Another one is Heartless. Is that could be probably made into a TV show, probably a Twilight Zone-ish type treatment, really.
Anything challenging about putting this book together?
Challenging, perhaps individually, a few things. Like Sofko's Drummond taking the 10 months, but there was nothing challenging. It was just a matter of kind of thinking to myself, what am I going to do with all this stuff and gathering it all up? But it's just you just collect things over time. And for me, it was words and pages.
Thank you for sharing your insight into the background of putting this book together. The title, again, is Meanderings, Poetry and Short Fiction. Our author is W.A. Salmon. Thank you, Bill, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Where do we get copies of your book?
Well, mainly you can, people have ordered it on Amazon. That's the most ready venue you can get it through. It's not on shelves yet. We're hoping that changes, though.
Best of luck in putting that together, and I'm assuming also that Trafford Press would be a good source.
Certainly, yes. It's right from the source, and try Trafford.
Thanks again for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks, Jay.
For Indie Book Publishing and Trafford Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear the latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on toginet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you. Here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Rising Above Grief for People and Pets, a true story of love, caring, and sharing. And the author, Philippa Kingsley. And Philippa joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Philippa.
Hello, Steve.
Great to have you with us. This is going to be quite a journey because you've been on quite a journey for some time, and we'll get into those details in a moment. But I first wanted to just read a couple things that you have written about your book, just to set the stage for everyone. You say this: Rising Above Grief for People and Pets will help you through the emotional earthquake of grief with the realization there is a beginning, a middle, and an end to this process, and that you will learn to live and laugh again. And boy, that last statement there, to learn to live and laugh again, there's times when death and suffering around us, especially with those who we love, it's hard to understand or even believe that could ever happen again, right?
That's right, but things can, because everything changes. Nothing's permanent in life. Our moods, how we feel, how we think, everything changes, the ebb and flow. The only thing permanent in life is impermanence. I think it's important to remember that for everybody, because we tend to forget that as human beings. We're so busy running around, busy being busy, as I say.
Right.
It's important to balance and check into what you feel and what you think, and to be true to yourself. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you live in the world, to be true to yourself and to know that the most important thing in life is love. And I'm not talking about love, because that's quite different. But, you know, pure divine love transcends all, transcends everything. And we go through all sorts of traumas and tests in life, and life is a learning lesson. And once you get through all these different things, you realize you're not who you thought you were. You're actually the balance of the essence of the soul of who you are. And that's basically, I would say, where it's at. And to trust and to just realize that love is all around you in whatever form it is. And that when we go through the grieving process, it is totally like an emotional earthquake. It's devastating. And, you know, there's 3 points of grieving. There's the pre-grieving, the grieving process itself. And then after that, and it can take, and there's no right way or wrong way. It just is what it is. And a lot of people don't understand this in the West, whereas in the Far East they tend to understand more. But, you know, as human beings, it's wherever we live, it's something that we all have to go through at some stage, because we're not forever, as I say. We think we are, but we're not.
Right.
You know, the physical body is not here, but, you know, who we are, the essence of who we are, does go on, but not the physical body. That's the shell that passes away. And I think also with a pet or a person, you know, with a beloved companion animal, it's very, very difficult to think that, you know, that they're not there anymore. You can't strike them, you can't stroke them behind the ears. You know, you can't give them a belly rub, a tummy rub, or anything like that. But the presence of them is still around you, and that always will be. In your heart, the essence of who they are. And it's the same, you know, whether it's a parent, a friend, you know, a human being, any being. Loss is loss, as I say, whether the person is four-legged, two-legged, furry, or feathered. You know, the grieving process is the same. That's what I would share with everybody.
Well, before we get into more about the details of your book and the different messages and the themes, tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a certified vortex healing, divine energy healing practitioner. Tell us about what that means.
Well, vortex healing, and the basics, in basic terms, what it is, it's a healing modality. But it's not just any old healing modality. It's also a path towards awakening to true self. And what is awakening to true self? It's basically that everything is pure divine love. And awaken to pure love. And there's various different things that help people on the different paths. It works at the level of the mental, the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, and the karmic levels. And, you know, it's not New Agey. It's been around for over 6,000 years. And it's taught around the world also. And this is what I was guided to do. I never in a million years thought this is what I would be doing. But in life, it's like shedding a skin. You shed your old skin, but you're still the essence of who you are and who you're meant to be or whatever it is, any different time or time in life. So, as I say, the levels that it works at the as I said, the mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, and karmic levels, and I'm channeling energy. It's from divine consciousness imprinted onto human consciousness, and it works at the cellular level. Most people's issues are based in the cellular level, and that's really what I work at. Not just a spiritual massage of, ooh, that feels lovely, and then you've still got the same issues. It's really working at a deep core level to shift one's issue. Yeah. That's the basics.
And you say that this book has been written from totally a personal perspective. What happened that created this book?
Well, my beloved father and my dogs, my adored dogs, passed away. And this has been a whole journey for me. It wasn't just something of saying, oh, I'm going to write a book now. It wasn't like that. I never thought I would be writing a book. But in life, you don't know what's going to happen. So basically, through everything that came through and what happened to me, I just felt that it's comfort and compassion to be able to write this book. And it was a lot of notes that I kept, writings over the years. When I, as I say, the grief and the whole process of everything that I went through when my first dog passed away, Vogie, and English Cocker Spaniel, and then my father and then my other English Cocker Spaniel dog called Cosmo passed away in 2009. And then a year and a half later, I was guided to write this book, and everything channeled through me, everything. So I have all my notes, and it came from another realm of being. It wasn't just me sitting there physically writing a book. It just came through me, all the words, everything. It's been a spiritual path, spiritual journey that we all go through in life if we choose and we're ready. And I was ready to do this, and through this, this is what I do to help people go through the grieving process. This is what I specialize in, with grief. Because it's not many people like to discuss it, as I said earlier, you know, in the West. So it's the book is comfort and compassion, but with a very strong spiritual energy that comes through.
Now, you also say that 50% of your book's for people and then 50% for animals. What do you mean by that?
Okay, the first story, the first 50%, if you like, is to do with, you know, the story of what happened with my father. As I say, the pre-grieving, the grieving, and afterwards, and the aftermath and everything of that. And it's all interconnected. And everything else is to do with companion animals, with pets. What do you do when you've lost a beloved pet? How do you get through it? How do you talk to people? What do you do? The various things that can help you, the different tools that can help on all of this, and the emotional side of it, and the grieving process, and knowing that you can talk to someone, that somebody, when you've been through something yourself, it's much easier to empathize with other people because you've been through it. Otherwise, it's just talking, it's just words, vacuous words otherwise. So it's the emotion, it's the heart, the spiritual heart that opens to help people. And that's what I'm guided to do, and that's what I do. I've also helped people also who've lost children as well. I also deal with people, which is obviously devastating for families, and I've helped that. I've helped children and the families also. And also my mother, who had Alzheimer's, there's a story about her in there as well. She's passed away this year, actually. So it's everything, the whole process of what we go through, but just knowing that this is not the end. This is what we're going through on a human level. There is another world, another realm, another essence of being, of the soul, of who we all are. But the book is to help people, whether, as I say, whether it's through people, whether it's through pets. It's going through the issue of grief and helping people and guiding them through it with the understanding that, you know, they will learn to live and laugh again. One can't understand it when you're going through something. Everything is just dark, dense. You can't operate from anything. You feel like in another world. You just feel the world, nothing is important, nothing means anything, there's no balance, there's no equilibrium anymore. What's the real meaning of life? But when you understand that death is actually part of life, but when you're going through something, you can't think that way. You just go through the emotions, and as I say, it is truly an emotional earthquake from the depths of the whole being, from the whole soul. It shakes you to the core level, the core root of it. And to be able to get some help from somebody that understands on many levels is quite something. I also, at the time when I wrote the book, I hadn't studied, but I've actually been studying mediumship as well. And so I connect with animals in spirit, if that's what a client or somebody wants to, you know, connect with their pet in spirit or any other person as well, any other loved person. So this has been a whole journey of everything. It's a whole process. And it's it's really, at the end of the day, it's all about love, and that whoever we have in our lives is still in our hearts, in our physical heart, in our whole being. And we feel alone, and you know, but we're not alone. That's what I would share with everybody.
And thus, I see in the table of contents, I see unconditional love mentioned more than once.
Yes, unconditional love. And I say animals, actually, companion animals, or any animals, actually give unconditional love. Truly, more than humans, actually. Because with humans, things become more conditional, often. Not always, obviously. So it's keeping the options open of everything, realizing that love is there, love is all around us. We just have to be quiet long enough to feel it and be there to help us, to guide us, just to be and to be in the moment. And you can't live in the past, you can't live in the future, you just have to live in the moment. You'll never have that time again. But everything is pure, unconditional love. And to have that time when you know that somebody's going to pass away, beloved, as I say, it could be a friend, whoever you have in your life, anything, is to be able to sort of clear the energy from that, to be able to say goodbye, say things that you want to say to them or that they wanted to say. It's just fear that stops us from doing things. Fear is the most is the most challenging thing for human beings. So it's letting go of the fear and being helped to let go of the fear, because there's no other time. This is it. It's living in the moment of what one is experiencing at that time.
And thus, this power of love, caring, and sharing. Unique chapter. Chapter 11 talks about a frog. Now, tell us about the frog.
Oh, the frog. Ha-ha. That was amazing, yes. Well, it shows us that it was shown to me that I saw this frog, which was in my garden. And the frog wanted to show me the grieving that went on when the frog lost its mother, that all animals feel, it doesn't matter whatever they are, farm animals, you know, companion animals, all animals, when they lose somebody that they love, all animals have emotions and feelings of love, sadness, you know, fear, everything, as we all do, as human beings do also. So basically the frog story was something obviously that I decided to include it as a chapter, because I was guided to, because it shows us whatever we have and whoever we have in our life, even a frog has feelings. It lost its mother, you know, and that's the sadness. And, you know, by the frog having its hand on its mother, the part that was left, you know, because it said a hawk had taken the rest of her, it was devastating. It was just so devastating on a core level to see this. I couldn't stop crying. Just couldn't stop crying at that moment, because the emotions of how the frog was feeling, and as an animal communicator, that's what I connected with, and that's what I do with animals. I connect with animals and how they feel, how they think. They show me pictures, or I connect, or thoughts and things come through me, how they're feeling, and I ask them questions and different stuff. So between the vortex healing and then the animal communication, that's how I connect with animals, and to help animals.
So the promise is, we can learn to live and laugh again, but you have to trust in the process.
You do, because everything in life is a process, everything. You just have to trust that you will be looked after and you're not left alone, even though at times when you're going with something and something's happened and it's devastating to the whole psyche, that literally things change, because that's what happens. Life is change. We change. And how you feel today is not the same as you're going to feel tomorrow, because that's how life is. We grow, we change, and that's why it's important to tell, to have love and caring and sharing with compassion for everybody, all sentient beings, and for ourselves, because you have to love yourself and like yourself before you can love and like anybody else in life. It's having compassion for all and realizing that everything is love. If you just trust that something higher than all of us is we are surrounded by, it's nothing to do with religion. You know, you're connected with the divine. I like to use the word divine, actually. And everything is divine healing and the divine. We are not alone. We think we're alone, but we're not. So it's reaching out to everybody we have in our life and saying, I love you. Just those words can mean everything. Even people who have been difficult in our lives and challenging, you know, because also when people are going through all sorts of situations, that's when they're more vulnerable. And you can say something to them. It can be that one word that can change their whole life, their whole way of orientation of how they're thinking, and how you connect with them and how they connect with you. But as I say, remember, everything is love, caring, and sharing. And to trust. Trust in the process. And eventually to realize that you will learn to live and laugh again. When you're going through something, you think you'll never will. Nothing changes. But in time, it will. It's timing. As I would say, on average, it takes about 2 years to get over the grief, to be able to deal with the grieving process. On average. I mean, everyone's different, obviously. And people that blanket off, that don't want to deal with it, eventually at some stage down the line in life, they will have to deal with it. It will hit them. So it's like sowing the seeds. It's like sowing the seeds for somebody. And sowing the seeds of love. And that's really all it is. Just having love all around you. As I say, it's not love. That's different. But love. Pure divine love.
We've been listening to Philippa Kingsley. She's the author of her book, Rising Above Grief for People and Pets, a true story of love, caring, and sharing. Philippa, tell us how to get your book. You have a website.
I have a website. I do. It's called www.healingpeopleandpets.com. www.healingpeopleandpets.com. You can buy the book on Amazon. At Amazon.com, at Balboa Press. You can also buy it from my website, also at Barnes & Noble. And you can also buy it in the UK at Amazon.com.co.uk. And all the other Amazon ways of buying out books on Amazon. And obviously at Balboa Press worldwide. And it's not a sad book. It's a lovely book. It's a beautiful book. Go onto my website. Look and see what I do, understand where I'm coming from. And if you'd like to connect with me, please send me an email at philippa@healingpeopleandpets.com. It's all on my website. The book, explaining about the book is on there as well. On every single page of my website, you know, you've got the front cover of the book and then how to purchase and a little bit about the book also.
Well, thank you, Philippa, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Don't Count Me Out, A Guide to Better Grades and Test Scores, Pre-K to 12th Grade, Making Winners Out of Your Struggling Student Despite Dyslexia, ADD, and ADHD, or Educational Difficulties, and the author is Barbara Dianis, and Barbara joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Lulu. Hello, Barbara.
Hello.
Great to have you with us, Barbara. Before we get into your background and the obvious details of your book, let me just read a couple things in general to set the stage. I think the title really set the stage in many ways. This book is a real positive in nature, and it's based on your perspective of a once dyslexic student who literally became a member of the National's Dean's List, and you've been teaching for over 21 years, helping students to overcome their learning challenges and become academic winners. Now, how in the world did you do that, Barbara? How did you overcome such a problem that most people seem to be pigeonholed, you know, for most of their lives?
How I overcame it is, in my mother's side of the family, I come from a long line of educators and doctors. And so I valued my education, and some of my mother's relatives were college professors as well. And to me, education was important. And the fact that I had dyslexia, and I was diagnosed 3 times as a young child through the University of Minnesota, it was a stumbling block, but I was bright, and I knew it, and I was not about to let dyslexia stop me. So as a very young child, there were, when I was diagnosed, there were very few methods available to help me. So I was pretty much on my own, and so I would get advice from some of the members of my mother's side of the family, but nobody lived local. So I had to really decide and make my own decision that I was going to do what it took to get over it. So every day after school, I would work on reading, sounding out words and parts, and I would really work at making sure that my brain would stop reversing. I knew that my brain reversed, so I would cover up most of the word and read it in syllables and cover up the entire page so that the words weren't moving around on the page. And I would look away sometimes if I saw it reversed and give my brain time to re-look at what letters I was truly seeing. And then I used an alphabet strip where the letters were turned correctly, and I would match mine up to theirs, to the correct letters, to make sure that mine matched. And over time, with using different learning techniques and breaking down in words and making my own reading list, I overcame it. And today I do not reverse anymore at all. And I even used to reverse numbers in on mathematical problems. So again, I had to use the same techniques in math so that I would not see a word, say that it was the number was 48, I wouldn't read it as 84, which would definitely change the outcome of the problem.
Yes, that's for sure. So you've learned that you can retrain or train your brain to overcome just about anything?
Well, I don't know if you can overcome just about anything, but certainly you can train your brain over time to do what I did, stop reversing or really greatly lessen the reversing process with diligent work and step-by-step procedures.
Now, you have taught from pre-K all the way through 12th grade. You've had some incredible successes, and of course, your book chronicles these 24 years of helping students find solutions to reach their full academic potential. Give us a few examples.
Well, some examples would be students that were in the younger elementary school years that would have testing diagnosis of ADD or dyslexia. And I would work with them in small groups over time and really work at tailoring their academic needs to the methods I presented to them. And all of those methods over time would start to really work with the kids and help them to be able to overcome their learning obstacles. And I gave them systematic methods that they could take and grasp onto, whether they were studying for tests or reading directions on a paper, making sure that as they worked through an assignment, they didn't lose the directions and start out okay, and then by mid-paper, they would start making mistakes until they changed the directions. I taught them many ways to self-check their work and to work hard at being able to overcome these difficulties, and even how to listen more and longer in class and focus better on what the instructions the teachers are giving and glean more from each instructional time.
It seems that we have an epidemic today of so many kids dropping out of high school, so we have to catch it early. We have to help these students at an early age.
Absolutely, because the earlier that the students can start working on their scholastic gaps or difficulties and weaknesses, the sooner they can start filling in those gaps and becoming more successful. But it's never too late. Even the students that I taught that I have maybe were diagnosed later in later middle school or middle school or even early high school with ADD, ADHD, or dyslexia or other learning issues, they too, when they were taught the proper methods and systematic ways, were able to really excel at learning despite their difficulties. And They were taught how to value their education, work at it, apply system methods, which are detailed at each grade level in my book, Don't Count Me Out. And they were able to exceed at learning far more than they ever thought, because these students were all average to above average intelligence. And if you have average to above average intelligence, you have the capacity to learn and to reach your educational potential.
Your book contains two books, as you put it, within one book. Tell us why you took that approach, and tell us a little bit about book one and then book two.
Well, the reason I took that approach is, as someone who overcame dyslexia myself and someone who has taught all those different grade levels, there's so many ideas and methods and just knowledge that parents and students alike need to know if they have these learning issues. And that is, all of book one really gives them a map to help them steer themselves through to a scholastic successful end that they can possibly reach when they really work at applying the correct methods. And so that whole part really works for whatever student, whatever grade level. These are things they need to know but will never be told in no other book. It's unprecedented, the information that is in there. Even how to deal with conferences and how to make sure that during the conference time that all the students' weaknesses as well as the areas that they are showing improvement and progress in are really discussed. And then also how to overcome test-taking issues. There's a whole chapter about test-taking makeover. Another chapter tells students all types of, about 58, details 58 ways to improve their learning and the grades that they get for their efforts. And then it takes the student through the different types of breaking down, if you have these problems, what are ways that have worked over time for other students to increase and improve their academic capacity. And then the second part of the book starts at pre-K, and it goes all the way up to the very beginning of college. And what it details is the entire curriculum and different methods that students can use to overcome their academic weakness. So say that a student is, for example, in fifth grade, and they're having problems with reading comprehension. They just need to go to that chapter, look it up, and look at the different ways that can help them improve their reading comprehension skills, or their reading skills, or their focusing skills, or their test taking. And then if they find that they are below grade level in their academic performance, say that they're a fifth grader reading on a second or third grade level, they can go back to the grade levels that they are working, that they're actually working on, and go back to those things and see, okay, if you're a second grade level reader, these are things that you need to do to improve. And so they can, with the help of their parent or tutor, or just even their own selves, because everything is very simple, simply stated with step-by-step procedures, they can fill in their own learning gaps. So say that they're a fifth grader, they start with the second grade things, and as they start to improve, they go to the third grade strategies, the fourth, and then on to the fifth, and so on.
Well, that would be the big question that you just talked about. How difficult is it to implement these strategies, these techniques? And you're saying it's a step-by-step process that a parent can do it, a teacher can do it.
Or students themselves can do them. Because a parent, I have written them very so that a student themselves could have a parent maybe oversee making some flashcards or whatever the technique tells them, and then they can go and do them independently, especially if they're out of the earlier elementary grades and the preschool grades. And they are written to be implemented during study time and homework time, and they can also be working on their own work, reinforcing their own curriculum while they're working on remediating their skills.
Well, we have a growing challenge. It seems that more and more students struggle with these different kind of learning disabilities, and of course that's leading to more and more people dropping out Somehow we've got to turn this around, and it sounds like your book gives us a roadmap.
It gives us a really good roadmap, and I'm very proud of the work that's in there, because it is something that actually has been copyrighted by the United States Library of Congress, which doesn't happen very often. And it gives the kids a roadblock to start valuing education and understanding that to navigate themselves through life, most people will need more than just a maybe 9th or 10th grade education or early 11th. They've got to at least get an equivalent of a GED or a high school, graduate high school. We've got to have kids, instead of dropping out, realizing they have other alternatives. They don't have to be that student who they feel can't learn. They don't have to be the one that's always at the bottom of the barrel. They can implement strategies and learn the things they need to learn and become college, high school graduates.
So your book really helps restore so important academic self-esteem in students, that no matter what grade level, that it's so critical, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's very critical. When a student believes they can succeed at learning and they put the time in and they're motivated to learn, you will see a real increase in their grades over time. And that academic self-esteem is vital, and also the value of education. And that's what I had to do, is I maneuvered my way up through the grade levels and then eventually became National Dean's List. I valued my education, and I put to practice step-by-step methods that I kept designing and choosing. This one works, this one doesn't, for my own self. And, you know, I was told that I would never be very high in the academic rungs, but I ended up, you know, of course, going through graduate school and everything else, and I learned that it is possible, even with some obstacles, you can become an academic winner in a world that it doesn't look like it is possible. And I also learned that to value education is important, because we need Americans and we need students to really think, why am I dropping out, and is this a good choice for me, and what will I be missing if I do not have a GED or a high school diploma in my life?
And it's just time for America to regain its scholastic competitive edge in a global world.
It is, because we are way behind many countries. In some areas, we're in the 21st. We're 21st in line. In certain areas of other countries, we've got to start valuing education and becoming a society that at least has high school diplomas or GEDs.
We've been listening to author Barbara Dianis. She is the author of her book, Don't Count Me Out, A Guide to Better Grades and Tests. Barbara, tell us how to get your book.
You can get my book at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It is available at lulu.com, and on my website there's information again for it to be where it's available at www.dianiseducation.com, and that's spelled D-I-A-N-I-S education.com.
Thank you so much, Barbara, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you so much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Lulu.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern, as Steve interviews another great author.